My name is Dan Brown, and I'm here today again with another Lenses on Information Architecture. And today I get to talk to Grace Lau. Grace, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me.
So let's get right into it. You are an information architect and have participated in the Information Architecture Conference and do World IA Day stuff. So, and you're the first IA that I'm talking to on this particular season of Lenses on Information Architecture. So thank you for that. Talk to me a little bit about, I'm really genuinely interested in collaboration, like how people do collaboration, especially with the kind of work that we're doing, which tends to be very abstract a few steps from reality. What are some of your favorite techniques for drawing people in to the IA process or to the design process generally?
Well, this is going to be something that's probably very mundane for you, Dan, since I know you also spoke very recently at the IA conference, The Art of Asking Questions. So one of the first things that I would tend to do is ask a lot of questions, like, what are we trying to get at? Like, what is the goal? Who are all the people involved? And it really is come down to like drawing that map of ecosystems of what is everything trying to, like, what is everything and how do they all relate, right? So that's the number one thing I do with clients, with my team, just to understand what is the domain and the space that we're dealing with. And what are the possible like rabbit holes that we could, you know, jump down into?
You say that like rabbit holes are a good thing. Like sometimes I position rabbit holes as like, that's something that's like a big topic that we can go down, but maybe we shouldn't. But I like the idea of sort of positioning them as like, no, let's think deeply about one of these things. Can you give us an example of maybe a conversation that you were having recently where you sort of went off on something that was really deep or deep in the weeds of something?
A recent project we did was around healthcare, right? And healthcare, as you know, is extremely complicated. And this one had to deal with how do different agencies, government agencies, they pass down requirements to, say, hospitals and clinics and offices around the information they collect about their patients, because you have to deal with Medicare or whatever type of healthcare reimbursement information, right? So that is a very mind-bewildering thing, because I've always looked at healthcare as like, you know, the patient experience. I mean, that is very easy to relate to. Everyone is a patient at one point in their life, right? And everyone can be a caretaker at one point in their life, but like to be on the other side of like from the doctor's office to the information they need to collect from patients, and then be able to send that to other companies through a platform, or like what do you have to do with medical coding and analysis, and how does all this information, what kind of information is being collected and sent to these things? It can get really, you know, complicated, as an understatement, to understand all those different connections and relationships of things that are being sent, right? And one rabbit hole could be like, how do you code? What is a condition? And what is a treatment or a procedure? And so some of these things can be opportunities, because, well, yeah, there's a need there for a taxonomy, or there's a need here for some kind of agreed upon thing that can be used to make sure everyone is speaking the same language. Or it could be something that we just don't want to deal with at this time, because, you know, the company needs to move forward with this thing that they're building or this product or this initiative. And so I see rabbit holes as a way of like, yeah, we're just gonna like dig enough to see what's out here first, you know, to uncover what is possible. And then like, depending on which rabbit hole you choose to jump into is kind of where we'll take things further.
Yeah, that's great. I appreciate sort of leaning on questions to try and help understand the domain, and also sort of relying on your experience or your intuition or just simply your curiosity to say, you know what, this is a weird and complicated topic, so let's spend some time on it. I think there's the lost art of satisfying our curiosity, and by doing so, we also signal to the people that we're talking to that we're interested in their world, right? We're interested in the work that they're doing and how they do it, and even the details that seem inconsequential to them are meaningful to us. I wonder if you could talk a little bit now about sort of the transition from understanding a domain like healthcare to then building a product around designing a structure that we can sort of build a product around. What is that? What are some of the steps that you take? What are some techniques that you use to go from modeling or understanding a domain to modeling the structure of a product?
They would have to do with what is it that we want this product to do, right? I mean, one thing is that you have this domain, and then you have these things like objects. These are things that are deliverables or things that this is relating to. Oh yeah, you have a medical code, or you have a lab report, or you have these healthcare assessments, right? These are like different data points that is being collected. And then from there, then what is needed to do next with it, right? So we're kind of like following the data to create some kind of structure around it. So the product would be something that is built around that information and what needs to be done with this afterwards. So it's kind of like a combination of like object-oriented UX, I guess, at the same time of like task flow. Because yeah, like well, the thing that you might need to do for this particular product is that we need to send data or reports to a government agency. So then you like, how do you find the data? How do you like filter through different tags and whatnot and send it over? And I would, structure it around what are the key data points, who's actually using this product, and then move forward from that. Because I think it's, building personas and understanding how things are being used otherwise is probably the next thing.
Is there one tool or technique that you're gravitating to, especially these days? Is there one thing that you sort of one I don't know, sort of approach in information architecture or tool in information architecture that you are really enjoying using these days?
I flip between using Miro with an O and FigJam as
Okay.
whiteboarding tools. And that it just happens to be those things that it can get really complicated with Miro because some people are like, oh yeah, we can do all these things and there's templates and all that stuff. And then there's also like as basic as you can get, let's get like a post-it and then move it and then draw a connection to it. That's good enough to just to get people on the same page. So depending on the team and the things that we need to do, then I would define on those things. But yeah, just having a really good infinite canvas is
Well,
always
I like how you said that. Just having a good infinite canvas. I went from never using Miro to always using Miro. And I mean, obviously there's a pandemic thing ish going on, but also just it is maybe second only to Slack, the fastest tool adoption that I have ever experienced. Was that your experience as well?
yeah. What I like about Miro is can be very flexible because I can be move things out of Miro into Airtable or into Google Sheets and be able to be very flexible on how I'm manipulating or showing the information. Because we could use go from like mapping concepts, right, to moving to user research and collecting insights from there. And then from there, move to Airtable and then try to codify it, everything. So it's been very versatile as a tool that I
Right.
can and now like lots of different things. It even has very fundamental wireframing schools in there as well. So it doesn't allow you to go overboard in terms of designing stuff. It's you just enough so that you can move on to more higher fidelity design stuff.
Yeah, I mean, especially since a tool like Figma is really geared towards higher fidelity. I mean, you can obviously do some wireframing in there, but it's meant to be a high fidelity design tool. So designing in Miro or wireframing in Miro is, in a sense, kind of a good place for that, because you're never going to get high fidelity in
Right,
Miro.
right. And what I also like about Miro is that you can do very quickly site maps, the mind mapping tool that they have in there. So you don't have to go to yet another place to do stuff.
Right.
Very basic ones, though.
So let's talk about the practice of user experience or even information architecture. And as someone who's been doing this for a long time, I'm at this interesting point in my career where I'm thinking I need to question some of the underlying assumptions of the practice. And I'm really curious about I mean the theme of this conversation is lenses. These conversations is lenses. So I want to take a new lens to user experience, or product design or information architecture. Is there one aspect of IA or UX that you think needs to be examined more closely? Is there one aspect to our practice that you think needs questioning that we haven't questioned in a while or ever?
Well, I wouldn't know if it's never been questioned, but something that's been on my mind recently is efficiency, I guess. Because as we get things done, and we're always at home nowadays, and so like the number one thing is like, how am I getting things done? That efficiency lens of how I'm approaching stuff is always been on my mind because like, well, I'm both my own project manager as well as the account manager, and I'm also a mentor to many people at the same time. So, as I help people understand how to do things, I'm also trying to architect how people are doing things, like in terms of communication and collaboration. Like, how do we like set up those spaces for people to be more efficient at what they're trying to do? So that might be something, I don't know, if people are interested in looking at in terms of lenses. It's also like, how do you design meetings and how do you design conversations? How can we be more efficient at doing those things? Because, yeah, there are plenty of books that can help educate us. Same time, though, I think some of these are very hard to refine skills without lots of practice and years.
Grace, that was a really interesting answer. So let me see if I can help you unpack this a little bit more. You talked about how we get our work done, and you talked creating spaces for people to do the work. Do you think this is largely being influenced by the fact that a lot of us are working 100% remote these days, or were these thoughts and considerations occurring to you before that?
I feel that these are things that we've always had to do before the pandemic, but it's more magnified now because we have to be accountable out of sight, right? When we're not in the office, when we're not visibly doing work, how can we show our efficiency? Right? There's this trust thing that we have to
Right.
manifest somehow. And most of that manifestation of efficiency is through communication, email, and how we're showing our work and how we collaborate.
So, can you give me an example of how you've counseled someone recently in which they were doing something in one way or maybe in one venue? And was there a moment where you suggested that they move it to a different venue or take a different approach, because maybe not even for efficiency's sake, but just for transparency's sake or some other driving force that they hadn't thought about?
So I run it's a volunteer type of thing where it's a unpaid apprenticeship program. And I the last project we had like two designers, a researcher, and a data scientist on our project. And so whenever we took notes and we're trying to like build this assessment report together, some team members were like, I think I'm very efficient at thinking on my own first. And so they would take their information and they would, draft it outside in a Word document, right? But because we're all distributed and we all work different times of the day, different work styles and everything, it's really hard to see people's approach and thinking when it's siloed that way. So like, well, let's put it together in one place. Don't put it on your own Miro board. Don't put it in your own Word document. Let's put it in Google Doc, somewhere where we could all like, we can see each other working on this giant, massive 60-page document. And you could see the direction in, when we're working on. So like that is one way that we're trying to show transparency, accountability between a team. Probably not the best example, but there are definitely certain circumstances where this has come up before where feedback is given in separate documents. I mean, in this day and age where we have so many tools for collaboration and sharing, it feels like kind of going backwards a little bit with some practices.
Well, and I feel like this is a vestige of how people didn't want to share stuff until it was ready. And
Yes.
we were, I mean, we've been dealing with this for years, right? This, these, what I think of as bad collaboration habits of waiting until some sort of imaginary threshold is reached before we share something. And that we've long had to help people unlearn those habits so that they kind of share early versions of their work. I think even with now we've been talking about Miro, what I'm hearing you say is it's not even like show me a rough draft. It's show me the work as it's happening. Like I understand. I will give you the benefit of the doubt. I understand that you are still working through this stuff. I'm not going to nitpick every word that you write. I just want to see where your brain is at because we're not in cubes right next to each other anymore. Did I get that right? Is that resonating?
Right, because we want to see iteration. We want to see your approach, right? And then we it, what's hard to do that when you're hiding it.
Right.
And I think it's interesting because I think earlier on in my career, it's like, yeah, there's it's too messy, or like, I don't want to show something that's not at a that can't be made sense of yet. Like, I'm still trying to figure out. I don't want people to see that I'm still working on it, right?
Right.
But I think at the same time, like as I'm growing into a more team approached ways of collaboration, it has become imperative, even crucial, to show all these things and the messiness and the iteration of how things move change from like day to day on a continuous level, because they can see where your thoughts are moving towards, even if you're not around to explain it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's really good thought. It's like when you were a kid and you were doing your math homework and they said, show your work, right? And it's if you're good at math, you're like, I wouldn't even know how to articulate what I'm doing. My brain just sort of solves the problem. But what you're really learning in that is sort of stopping, pausing, and kind of breaking down the steps and trying to externalize some of that thought process. And maybe that's the skill. Like the skill is not polishing a presentation. The skill is, wait a minute, slow down, think about what you're doing and try and put that on paper so the rest of us can participate in that process as well.
Yeah. I mean, that's how teachers teach it these days. You start with an outline, you do concept maps, and you do structures, and you ask these questions so that in the end, yeah, you do get a final paper or essay out of it,
Right.
right? And then I'm seeing this because my son, he's in sixth grade right now, and so he's learning about these concepts, right? For him, he's like, oh yeah, I'm just gonna write it down, right? And he tries to skip all those things in the process. So no, show me the work, which I hated when I was a kid. But I'm learning about like what it means to need to communicate and, like you said, externalize all this thinking process.
Yeah. Do you think if the sixth grade version of yourself could hear you say now out loud, show me your work, that that sixth grade version of Grace would be very disappointed?
Like, why are you doing this to me?
Are you doing this to your child? I hated doing it. It's funny the things that I will frequently say things out loud and I'll be like, oh my gosh, if the younger version of me could hear me now, he would be
Yeah.
very disappointed.
I used to hate group work in high school and middle school
Really?
because I was like a total introvert, did not know how to communicate with other people. Yeah, and now I'm like, yeah, more teamwork, more group projects, more
Isn't that
presentations.
what? So, if you don't mind, what transform? Where did that? How did that happen? Where did that transformation happen?
When you came out to the real world, when you start working and realizing that you can't do everything on your own, right? This need for communications is so important, right? It's like it's not enough just to write, you have to say, you have to present, communicate your ideas. That's why actually your book, Communicating Your Design, I have both editions of it and it has been my textbook, a reference Bible in the early years of my career. Because it's
So
like,
good.
how do I even like break it down? It's like Dan already has it explained to me.
I never thought that breaking things down would serve me well, but here we are. I thought you were going to say, I liked your answer, and I thought you were going to say that we're working on things that require other people's participation. I think you said this,
Definitely.
like you can't do this work by yourself.
Yeah.
Not only that, like you have to do it with other people. Like there's too much going on. There's the problem spaces are too big for any one person to keep everything in their own head. And so being able to externalize what's going on allows other folks to participate in the process.
Right. At the same time, it's not just. There's no one true answer solution to anything,
Right.
right? And so needing to communicate and being in part of a team, you're including lots of different people's perspectives into your product, into your work, right? And that is true for trying to create a community, trying to create a design, or even a small local meetup group. It's not just your agenda. It's like what's benefiting the greater good, a collective.
So was there a moment in your career where you were like, okay, I need to leave that Grace behind and embrace this new Grace, or was it a gradual transformation?
I think it kind of clicked in library school,
Okay.
where I started getting really involved in the student groups, and I was hearing from people, yeah, we need to learn, how to program. We need to learn more about this. And so I started running around trying to set up workshops and events that kind of either if we're not teaching each other, we're just learning it, figuring it out ourselves together, and just trying to build like a learning community space for us. And then that kind of led me into doing things after I graduated into professional groups, meetups, and now World Information Architecture Association.
So, I'm so excited for that. But to come back to our questioning of assumptions, so I asked you, what needs questioning? And you said sort of how we do the work, which I loved. I've been also trying to unpack some preconceptions that I have about the work. And as you point out, I've got books that document all of my preconceptions, so I can just flip open to any one of those pages and go, huh, I wonder if this is a real thing, or you know, maybe I should question this. And one of my favorite parts of doing design, doing IA, is flowcharts, right? Just sort of thinking about the logic of how pathways and processes work. And now I'm starting to wonder, is that a useful model for us? Should, like, what are some of the inherent biases or problems with trying to think of the world as a flow chart? I mean, you will pry them from my cold dead hands, don't worry. But as a thought exercise, what is it about flow charts that needs questioning? Are flow charts a good model for us to be using, or should we be revisiting that model? What do you think?
So the thing about flowcharts that I always found confusing is that there's so many names for it, right? There's journey map, experience map, task flow, user process, you know, it's all. And then you're like, well, do we need to know? I mean, I think if we're trying to combine all of these things together, then it gets there's no focus, there's no primary audience for a process flow or a flow. Because like one of the main things that you want to know is like who's the primary consumer of this flow, right? And you want to design for that. But at the same time though, there's so many layers to a flow that it's hard to capture it succinctly and without showing how it's related to the bigger system, right? So I feel that flows, you can also pry it from my dead cold hands too.
I thought we were simpatico in that way. Yes.
But it's hard to me to say, oh yeah, we're doing a process flow versus a task flow or user flow. It's just a flow. You're just documenting how things are working, whether it's from a user's point of view or from a system's point of view. We're just like documenting, right? And there's so many different types of people who create it. It's not just IAs, but also system engineers and architects who are also doing this. So it's kind of it's funny how like we have such ownership of it, but at the same time, we're not willing to collaborate too much with it at the same time. So I guess one bias I see is, look, how can we make that more collaborative? And I don't know.
There's a language of flowcharts, right? And flows kind of have a beginning and an end, right? That's something that we sort of, and we've seen circular flows or cyclical flows, but the bias is towards kind of having a beginning and an end, and that decision points are binary, right? We sort of render those as yes or no. There's a whole host of assumptions that get baked in to these flows that I feel like, I really liked how you put it just now, which is like, the real world is so complex, and there are often attempts to kind of layer in all of that complexity, which ends up sort of obscuring the flow, and then also making it difficult to render how the world actually works with these kind of very simple diagrammatic mechanisms as well.
Yeah, it is very circular, and sometimes I feel like, well, that's not it. There's more to this. There's more touch points that needs to happen, and then that comes and goes. Well, is this turning into like a experience map?
Right. Or is it are we have we made this too messy to actually convey a meaningful story with it as a diagram? I think we will leave it there. Grace, that was fantastic. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
No, thank you. It was really fun to chat with you.